It's good to see you this evening. We're very glad for the presence of everyone here, especially those who are visiting with us. This morning we began to talk about what the Bible says in regard to deacons, and that subject elicited the occasion of commending and praising the men that we have. There are some people in this congregation who are not deacons, but do so much. And some of us were talking this morning after the lesson. I would just like to make a special comment, if I may, about a couple of folks. Phil and Pat Hunt, many of you may not be aware of this, but they take care of the books, the treasury, and the finances, and make up the statements. I say both of them because Pat does a lot of work behind the scene. I think Phil would agree with that. But we just appreciate them for what they do, and that is a tremendous amount of work. And sometimes people just don't get a lot of credit for things. We're not trying to brag unduly upon people, but I think the Bible does say that we do need to give honor to those to whom honor is due, and I think that would be good for us to mention that. I also want to mention some of our college students. They do things behind the scene to visit people, to visit the elderly, to help with some of the young kids, and just a whole number of things that I just think is very, very commendable. And if I may also just give a word of commendation to those college students who are very active in doing what they can do to be of help to others. We have a lot of folks in this church who are doing some very, very fine things. We've been talking about deacons, and we talked this morning about what deacons are, and we talked about the fact that we are in a position in this congregation to need to select about four more deacons to help with our work here. And so I want us to look at what the Bible has to say about selecting deacons. We asked the question, how do we select elders and deacons? What does the Bible say about that? Really, the Bible doesn't give any kind of special information about some set way that selection is to be made. If you look at the example in Acts chapter 6, for instance, where the seven men who were to serve the church and assist the apostles, especially in regard to the needy Grecian widows, the congregation selected them. That's what the apostles said. Choose from among yourselves these men that we can appoint to this particular task. And I think that's the principle that the Bible gives. The Bible does specify that this isn't something that elders choose. That's not our role to select those men who will be serving the needs of the church. It's not some certain group of men who select then more elders or something like that. But rather, this type of thing is done by the congregation. And I think the Bible doesn't specify the logistics of how that's supposed to occur, but it does just give us the principle that the congregation is to select those men who would perform that task of overseeing that church, and then those men who would perform the task of serving the physical needs of that church. Also, I think we need to appreciate that the Bible does give emphasis to the kind of men who are going to be able to perform those tasks in the best possible way. And that's where we want to address or to direct our attention this evening in 1 Timothy chapter 3, as we introduce this text in this morning's lesson. The Apostle Paul talks to Timothy about what he is to teach those at Ephesus in regard to the various roles that they might find themselves in. And he mentions in chapter 3 those who would be in the role of serving as overseers and in the role of serving as deacons or servants of the church. And so what he does is he gives a list of the qualities and the traits that need to be true of these men in order for them to do a good job in that task. And I want us to look at these verses. I want to just read what is said here about elders and deacons so we can get the whole picture. We're going to be focusing our attention tonight upon what is said specifically about deacons. But listen as I read. If you'd like to follow along, you may. You might just want to listen as I read what Paul says about the kind of men who need to be appointed and who need to continue to work hard at exemplifying these characteristics and these qualities in their lives. It is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work that he desires to do. An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? And not a new convert, so that he will not become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. And he must have a good reputation with those outside the church, so that he will not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Deacons, likewise, must be men of dignity, not double-tongued or addicted to much wine or fond of sordid gain, but holding to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. These men must also first be tested, then let them serve as deacons, if they are beyond reproach. Women must likewise be dignified, not malicious gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. Deacons must be husbands of only one wife and good managers of their children and their own households. For those who have served well as deacons obtain for themselves a high standing and great confidence in the faith that is in Christ Jesus. I want us to look at these particular verses, and I hope as we look at what is said, in particular about deacons, that we will appreciate that everything that is said relates to those qualities and traits that must be true if a deacon is going to be able to serve the needs of the church in the best possible way. He says deacons or servants likewise must be men of dignity, not double-tongued or addicted to much wine or fond of sordid gain, but holding to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. First of all, Paul makes it very clear that the kinds of qualities that need to be inherent in a man who's a servant of the church, very similar to what was said earlier in reference to elders. And just as there need to be characteristics and traits for an elder to be able to fulfill his task in the best possible way, so it is with deacons. And Paul says they must be men of dignity. This is not some light responsibility. It's a very important responsibility, because we're talking about formal servants of the church. The tasks that need to be done are not just some kind of mundane task that is of no consequence, but are things that are very important, very, very crucial. It may not be that the tasks of deacons relate to the spiritual work that the elders are overseeing directly, but the physical needs of the church are nevertheless very important and very crucial. You need men who are going to be men of dignity, that just stand out as men that you can feel confident in that they will get that job done. They will take care of whatever responsibility is put in their hands in the best possible way. And can you appreciate why Paul would say that a deacon should not be someone who is double-tongued? You don't want somebody in that kind of responsible servant position who's going to say one thing on one occasion and another occasion, or maybe different people say something else. And so he's not someone that you can trust what he says, or he promises this but doesn't deliver. And you need somebody you can rely on. You can rely on what he says. So not some person who is double-tongued, not some person who is addicted to much wine. And of course, wine in the Greco-Roman world was the table beverage. And yet, if someone was addicted to that, if someone loved that wine and would not just drink that table beverage in moderation, but instead would drink it in order to become intoxicated, that's not the kind of responsible person that you need to be a servant of the church. So I think we can appreciate why Paul would make that statement. And can you see why he says that the servants of the church must not be ones who are fond of sordid gain? I mean, these are men who are going to be put in charge of
those things that may relate to the monies that are the collective monies of the church, or maybe to that common property, or we saw in Acts chapter 6, the daily serving of food, and so you're talking about material things, and you don't want men who just show themselves to be self-centered men who view this as an opportunity to gain something for themselves. That's not the kind of men that we need, men who are struggling with that. And I want to emphasize, it's not like what Paul is saying here is that these are things or moral characteristics that deacons must aspire to, but if you're not a deacon, you don't have to worry about this. No, that's not the point. These are all moral characteristics that must be true of every Christian that we all need to be striving for, but if you're going to appoint men to serve the church in this area, you need to appoint men who are obviously successful in living by these moral standards. They're not constantly struggling with these kinds of temptations. So men who are not fond of sordid gain, but holding to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. And again, as we said this morning, we would like everyone to be thinking this next week about those men that exemplify these traits. And I think you should have some that would readily come to mind. He says in verse 10, these men must also first be tested. Then let them serve as deacons if they are beyond reproach. Doesn't that say something about the importance of the task? The great responsibility here? You want men that have already proven themselves in maybe some lesser responsibilities or other areas that they are indeed trustworthy and are faithful, and you can have confidence to put them in charge of these particular tasks as formal servants of the church. Let them first be tested. Let a person demonstrate that he has these qualities, that he can serve in such a capacity, and then let them serve as deacons if they are beyond reproach. Same statement was made earlier about elders. They need to be men who are beyond reproach or above reproach. I think it should be obvious to us that Paul doesn't mean by that that an elder or a deacon is a sinless person. None of us can claim that. He's not talking about men who have never done something wrong, and sometimes I think we can be overly critical in regard to these things and maybe hold something that was a mistake or maybe even a sin that someone committed in the past, but he's long since repented of that and proved himself, and yet somehow that still is some kind of a black mark. And so, well, he's a fine Christian, but he doesn't fit the qualifications for deacon. I think we need to maybe rethink that. But what Paul is talking about is that you obviously need men who are above reproach when it comes to these qualities, and that they obviously exemplify them. And it's very clear to everybody. He's not talking about perfect people, but he is talking about people who obviously exemplify all of these kinds of qualities, and men about whom there's not going to be some constant question. It doesn't make sense to appoint someone to a particular task when you've got a bunch of people in the church that really don't have confidence in that person for whatever reason. And we need, as a family of Christians here, to recognize that in making a selection process like this, that we have to not be overly sensitive about these kinds of things. It may be that there are some people who have some good reason, at least in their mind, why they don't feel confident about you in doing that particular work. Well, maybe that's something that would be of help to you to know, so then you can work on that to maybe then in the future be able to have demonstrated that you are now above reproach in that kind of area. We don't want to be overly sensitive in these kinds of things. We don't want to be overly critical and expect deacons to have some kind of standard that's impossible for them to live up to. But if you are wanting to serve in that capacity, you need to recognize that members need to have confidence in you, and there needs to be not some cloud of doubt. And that's what the point I think that Paul is getting at. These men need to be above reproach in all of these areas. Well, let me address now what he says in verse 11. And we're not talking in this particular church, we're not asking for us to apply anything that would relate to this particular verse, but this is a verse in the heart of these verses about deacons, and so I feel like now's the time to go ahead and address this. Verse 11 is kind of controversial, and so I want you just to think with me about this. It talks here in the middle of a paragraph about deacons, servants of the church. It talks about women and gives some statements about the kind of character traits that women that are being talked about here need to display. Women must likewise be dignified, not malicious gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. There are about three views or three interpretations of this verse that I've heard, and I think probably most of you are aware of these. I think the first two, in my judgment, are not correct. They're very common, though. And if somebody disagrees with me on this, that's completely fine. But the first interpretation that sometimes people suggest is that this is talking about the wives of deacons. And, of course, you can translate the Greek word for woman, wife. And so that's a reason why some people think, well, here there must be some qualifications or at least some things said here about the wives of deacons that need to be true. Yet the problem with that is, well, why would there be things said about the wives of deacons, but yet nothing said by Paul about the wives of elders? So that didn't make a lot of sense. So then some people say, a second view, well, maybe it's talking here in verse 11 about the wives of both deacons and elders. So here are instructions about wives, whether they be the wives of elders or the wives of deacons. Well, the problem it seems to me with that is that he says it right here in the middle of a paragraph about deacons. He didn't say it at the end where you could kind of apply it to both elders and deacons. No, it's right here in the middle of a paragraph discussing deacons. So that really doesn't make a lot of sense, seems to me. I think there's a third view here that, in my judgment, is correct. If we understand what deacons are and what they're not, I think the meaning of this verse becomes pretty much self-evident. Deacons, as we've emphasized, are servants. That's what the word means. It's not referring to some kind of official office or something that necessarily puts you above other people, no. It's simply a term that refers to servants who've been given a task. Can you not see that in the first century you might have certainly had some occasions where there would be tasks in taking care of circumstances like maybe those Grecian widows or like some other circumstances where a man, a male deacon, attending to that would not be appropriate? Perhaps some task that would put a man, if he were going to perform that task, in an intimate kind of setting with female members of the church. Now, if there's some women who are sick or in need of some nursing or some attention, women in the church would be the ones you'd want to appoint to take care of those sick women. Or maybe some task in regard to young children or young babies, you'd want women to be put as servants taking care of those tasks. It seems to me, folks, that the reason why Paul talks here in the middle of a paragraph about servants of the church, the reason why he talks in the middle of the paragraph about females, women, is he's talking about female servants of the church. That's controversial. I know that. And a lot of people just have sort of a knee-jerk reaction against that. But I think the reason why is because inherently, they think, oh, well, deacon is some kind of church official position that would necessarily put you above men. And so women could not be in that capacity. That's not the point of the term at all. I think what this is talking about is certain occasions where you'd appoint some women to perform some tasks that women needed to be the ones to do that it would not have been appropriate for men. In Romans chapter 16 and verse 1, the Apostle Paul there speaks of Phoebe and says that she was a servant. And the word there is the same word for deacon, diakonos,
is a servant of the church at Cenchrea. So here was a woman who that very term was used to describe her. There were some duties, some special tasks that she was given. In no way would that put her over a man. In no way.
But I think that's what Paul is talking about. And so such women who are
put in charge of those tasks, they need to make sure that they are women who themselves are dignified and not gossips. Can you see why he would say that? Because that might put them in a position where they might know some things about the members that you would not want spread around. And so he emphasizes that. Let them not be malicious gossips. Let them be temperate and sober-minded. Let them be faithful in all things. That's what he's talking about here in my judgment. Now, I'd be happy to talk with any of you after or on some later occasion about this. And again, this is controversial, and I admit that. I don't think it needs to be. But if you have some questions or want to talk further about this or disagree with me about my understanding of this verse, I'm happy to talk with you about that. Let me just say parenthetically, I can't do it tonight because I have a previous obligation. I've got to take care of this as soon as services are over with. People might be saying, yeah, likely story, Marty. You're ducking out of town real quick, aren't you? No, I'm not doing that, but I would be very happy to talk with you on a later occasion about this. I can't do it this evening, as I said, because of another obligation. But I believe that's what that verse is talking about.
Doesn't really affect us in what we're trying to do here. We don't have tasks that we especially need women to take care of. So what we're talking about are tasks that we need men for. And so, but I want to go ahead and talk about that because this verse is in the middle of this paragraph. He says then in verse 12, deacons, and he returns to the males here. It's very clear that the major servants of a local church are men. And he's talking about deacons, males, who are going to be the chief ones in that capacity. So he returns to them now in verse 12. Deacons must be husbands of only one wife. Sometimes people have interpreted that statement and also the parallel expression said in reference to elders as a statement about that they are not polygamists. And the way the English translates it, that's kind of the impression that maybe you get, the husband of only one wife as opposed to a husband of a plurality of wives. But of course, you know, that kind of makes people then start to scratch their head and say, well, does that mean that somebody could be a polygamist as long as he wasn't functioning as an elder or a deacon? And that, of course, doesn't make sense. No, I think if you appreciate the literal Greek expression, it becomes very clear what he's talking about. Literally, what he's saying is, let deacons be men of one woman. Men of one woman. That's literally what he's saying. A one woman man. In other words, it's not really a statement about his marital status at all. It's a statement about his sexual fidelity. He's not a promiscuous man. He's sexually faithful to his one woman. It's a moral statement. It's not a statement about his marital status. It's a statement about his morality. And so that's why he says the same thing in reference to elders. And so deacons need to be men who are faithful to that one woman. They're not married to a woman, and yet they're fraternizing with other women. They are faithful to that one woman. It's a statement of their moral and sexual integrity. And he goes on to say, and good managers of their children and their own households. Again, when he's talking especially about these males who were servants of the church, they are being given tasks that demand that they be good managers. And just as they are called upon to manage a household, they're called upon to manage various physical needs of the church and assist the elders in taking care of those physical tasks, that the elders might not be taken away from their spiritual responsibilities. And so these deacons need to demonstrate that by demonstrating that they've been good managers of their own households. And so again, as you think about men that you can next week put down on the sheet of paper that we'll pass out to you, that you think exemplify these traits and would be a good choice. Think about men who demonstrate that they are good managers of their household. That's what shows them to be men of responsibility and men of good discipline. And that's the kind of thing that Paul's talking about here.
Don't want to go back. He then says in verse 13, he concludes this whole discussion by saying, those who have served well as deacons obtain for themselves a high standing and great confidence in the faith that is in Christ Jesus.
I talked about this verse already in this morning's lesson. May I just say this as we kind of bring all this to a close?
It's a great compliment to have members of a congregation select you to be one of those men to perform a task like this. It's a great compliment. And we have these men that have already been serving in this capacity, and it's a great compliment to them, and they deserve those compliments.
And I hope that they indeed will have great confidence and have a high standing and will recognize that, and they will be respected and honored in that appropriate way for the good work that they do. And we're going to be asking you now to think about this in the coming week. And next Sunday, we're going to have sheets of paper that we'll have printed up for you to then put down four names of men that you believe would be good choices to serve in this capacity. I want to make one point about that, just by way of clarification. We don't want anyone to think that because a man is being selected as a deacon at this point, that that would preclude him from later serving as an elder. It may be that in the near future, we need to appoint additional elders. And so we don't want someone to think that someone who's appointed now to serve as a deacon, that that would mean that they could not then serve subsequently as an elder. But we want you to be thinking about this. Next Sunday, we'll maybe talk some more, or we will talk some more about the logistics of this process. And as elders, we're going to try to just lead in regard to the process. But as we said earlier, the selection is totally up to you. And I believe, and I think all the elders believe, that we have more than enough men to fill the task of selecting four men to function as deacons. And we hope that you'll be thinking about that and be thinking about these verses. Well, folks, we haven't been talking this morning or this evening about what to do to become a Christian. But you know, one thing I hope that really stands out as we talk about deacons in these passages, how important being a Christian really is. Whatever your role might be, whether you are a new convert or whether you are someone who's been a Christian for a long time and you're serving as a deacon, a servant of the church, or whether you are serving as an elder, or whether you are an older Christian woman who is exemplifying Christian traits to those who are younger, whatever be your particular role, it's so important to be a Christian. It's vital. And it's vital for us in our eternal relationship with God, but it's vital in regard to the work that God wants us to be doing as a congregation. And that's why there's so much attention given to these concepts in the New Testament Scriptures. Is there someone tonight who is not a true Christian? I hope you'll see the importance of it. Can we assist you in being baptized into Jesus Christ? If you are a Christian, yet you've been erring, can we assist you in that regard and lift you up, study with you, assist you in whatever way that we can? If you will, make that known while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement.